From theunce.com, this is the Unce Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunce.com. Hello and welcome to the Unce Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. My guest on this week's program is Natty Morrison, senior contributor for theunce.com. He spent this past weekend in Mariahville, New York, enjoying the 9th annual Camp Bisco, the Disco Biscuits Summer Festival, featuring jam bands, hip-hop, and a whole lot of electronic music. Artists on the lineup included Bass Nectar, Ween, Thievery Corporation, The New Deal, Diplo, Kill the Noise, Rusko, and much, much more. We're going to find out how that all went down. Let's go ahead and get to the interview. Tell me about some of the real standout DJs that you saw throughout your few days there.
Sure. Orchard Lounge from Chicago was an absolute great standout. They played a couple of sets. Thursday night, they played a set, which I actually missed because I wasn't at the festival that night. But they played the Silent Disco on Friday night, which was pretty cool to check out. Orchard Lounge also had Aaron Magner came up with them during one of their sets and played a little bit, which was cool. I did see Rusko. I actually was kind of sitting out for the Girl Talk set, and then all of a sudden from my campsite I could hear him start to drop in a cock and chug, and as soon as I heard that I sprinted over, and Rusko was, it was his usual self. It was very, very greasy, bonky dubstep, as I would call it.
And he's one of the leaders at the forefront of the dubstep movement from years back, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's a bit of a debate over where dubstep came from, you know, whether it came from London in that area with Rusko and Casper, or whether it was, there was some stuff earlier that coming out of, I want to say either the Netherlands or somewhere in that region in Europe, there was stuff getting sent in that was similar to that. And certainly there were dub beats at that 140 BPM that were there. But Rusko, definitely one of the people that I would look to be sort of the, forefathers of just sort of that really wobbly bass dubstep that's become, you know, just so increasingly popular.
Absolutely, absolutely.
As far as other DJs, I did get to catch a bit of Tipper, who was actually recommended to me by a friend of mine, George McCabe, and he was excellent. In some ways, you could look at it as having some dubstep elements. I mean, there's certainly a lot of wobbly bass, but it's a little bit more down-tempo, and it's a little bit more sort of the beats are a little more, I would say, hip-hop, and he was excellent. That was on Saturday. Those were some of the DJs that I caught that I was really impressed by. I caught a little bit of Bass Nectar set, who came out and announced after the Disco Biscuits first set on Friday night, you know, that he was, I think his quote was, excuse me, I'm a little bit drunk, but I'm, you know, excited to be here. You know, and he was sort of his usual brash self. And it actually, the set, you know, seemed to please a lot of the audience members out there. So those were a lot of the DJs that I was really impressed by.
So you think Bass Nectar got a pretty positive reaction from the Camp Bisco crowd then?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, my first encounter with Bass Nectar was actually at Camp Bisco 2 years ago. And I heard the name, but I wasn't familiar with any of his work. And there were a lot of sort of negative comments about Bass Nectar from some of the fans. And yet I went down there and he still had a huge crowd. So there seems to be, it's sort of split. For some reason, there's a bit of a backlash. And I don't know if that comes from the electronic community or from the jam community or both. But there seems to be some backlash against him. But then he also, there's a reason why he, you know, is a top name, you know, top billed performer at some of these festivals. So, I mean, the reaction was certainly excellent. I can't say that the reaction from every single attendee of Camp Bisco was the same. But for those who, you know, stuck around for a set, they seemed to really enjoy it.
Why do you think that there would be a backlash? Or, I mean, do you think you can point to anything that indicates why he's so popular?
Well, I mean, as far as popular, his popularity comes from, you know, there's an amount of talent there. You know, he's definitely an accomplished producer, and he's been doing his thing for, you know, a number of years. I think that some of the backlash maybe comes from, in some ways, you know, he's a very brash person, it seems to be. You know, some people might look at him as being a little bit full of himself, or a little bit conceited, perhaps. And then also, you know, I've heard reports that at some of his shows, there's no improvisation, you know, and it's a lot of, some of the issues that you hear about with Girl Talk as well, that, you know, it's a lot more of, you know, he's playing his tracks from his album, but not necessarily mixing any tracks live at the time. And so I think, especially with the jams community that is prevalent at Camp Disco, I think a lot of those people are looking for that live performance and that sort of live, spontaneous, in-the-moment improvisation or building to a climax. And so maybe they take a little bit of an offense that he's just, you know, hitting play and then just working, you know, more mixing a track as opposed to DJing.
Bass Nectar with his remix of Massive Attack's Rising Sun right here on the UNS podcast.
Okay, you mentioned improvisation, and I wonder, what did you hear from the live acts that were replicating some of those electronic sounds at Camp Disco?
Well, obviously, primarily the Disco Biscuits. We can speak to that later. Other acts, the New Deal was excellent late night, don't just pass. Their set actually was cut short on Saturday because of weather. But from what I got to see, it was great. Future Rock, although I didn't see them Thursday night because, again, I wasn't there, I did get to catch their PA set at the Silent Disco stage on Friday night, I guess Saturday early morning, more or less, and they were great. Even, you know, a band like Ween, who came out and is certainly not any sort of a jam band, you know, even though they're embraced by that community, you know, be it because of Fish's cover or because they just discovered its great music. But even then, Ween sort of stretched out some of their songs. I mean, obviously, they did the obligatory stretched out version of Voodoo Lady, but they played less songs than I had thought they would. So I think that, you know, that improvisational vibe is still going to be there because of the type of festival it's at.
Okay. Now, one of the big gets for the festival organizers was Thievery Corporation. What can you tell me about their set? I know that was much anticipated, even by members of the Disco Biscuits.
When we got to Camp Disco, there was a little bit of a delay on Friday because Woo Massacre's performance was, and this is true, delayed by about 45 minutes, I think, because Method Man was late and was, quote, and this is from various other media members who saw it, doing his eye makeup in the back. So they had to push that set forward. So I missed a little bit of Thievery's set because I wasn't sure when it was starting. But one of the coolest things about Thievery at first was I was sitting at my campsite, and then all of a sudden I started to hear just these roar of just, you know, and it's, you can hear it, you know, it's the sort of roar that you would hear if a DJ was building a set to a crescendo or something, or if a, you know, band was, you know, in the middle of a really intense solo. You started to hear this roar, and then, you know, instantly I had assumed it was a DJ at that point, and then I realized that it was Thievery. So I, you know, sort of booked it over down to the stage, and I was in the midst of doing a few other things at the time, but from what I saw Thievery, what I was really impressed by was, you know, they've got the sound that I'm familiar with, the Thievery Corporation, is sort of a more down-tempo, sort of more dub, not meaning dubstep, but more dub, almost reggae influence, and sort of more of a chilled-out vibe. But they really, really, I think that they exceeded what I'd heard on record. And granted, their records are incredible, but they really, as far as a live band, really, really did a great job of, they just took control of the crowd. I was absolutely impressed by them.
So yeah, they are more of a chill out music, as you say, but they were able to keep the energy up and keep the crowd real into it.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, that's some of the best things about this festival is the fact that there's sort of back and forth inspiration from all the advances, sort of, I think, to push each other to, you know, play, you know, the best that they can.
Richest Man in Babylon from Thievery Corporation, right here on the UNS podcast. Eric Hilton, one of the members of Thievery Corporation, has released a feature-length film, Babylon Central, which is coming out on DVD July 27th. We're going to try and get him on the podcast to discuss that project, as well as his music.
Let's talk a minute about the actual logistics of the festival. What can you tell me about the Indian Lookout Country Club? And by the way, is that Indians go there to look out for things, or is that white people looking out for Indians?
I think it could be either. I didn't see too many Native Americans, but I mean, I saw, you know, plenty of garbage, so I'm sure that they were all in the forest crying one single tear. But as far as the Indian Country Club is, you know, and I've been there, you know, as I said, 2 years ago, it really is, it's an excellent spot for a festival. Basically, the setup more or less is, you know, you come in and, you know, there's the long entrance in, but it's sort of on a bit of a slant, but it's small. I mean, that's the thing, is it's a small festival. If you were standing sort of, I guess, at the top of the festival grounds looking towards all the stages, you would have the dance tent, which was changed, to your left, and then down the hill all the way at the bottom, there were two main stages set up next to each other, and then there was a hill stage to your right. But all these places, I mean, it doesn't take anything more than, you know, 5 minutes to get between sets. And it's, it rained there, but there wasn't really too many issues with mud. It was, and the security there was run by, well, it was bikers, you know, but they did a good job of maintaining the peace and everything. And, you know, it's, you know, next to a place like, Three Sisters Park, like, you know, in Chillicothe Forest Summer Camp, it's one of my favorite spots for a festival.
And you said there were two main stages that were right next to each other. Was there any bleeding of sound, or did they do a good job of staggering the acts so that you didn't have too much going on and the sound was competing from one stage to another?
Mm-hmm. Well, they staggered the acts. So, I mean, it was literally, it was as though there was one, it was more or less like it was one stage. I mean, there were two separate stages, but it almost looked as though it was one stage with a divider in the middle, with the main stage being to the right and sort of the second stage being to the left. And I didn't really have any issues with there being any bands playing at the same time, although I did. It was kind of odd during Wu Master set when I was down there for that. There was a band that was sound checking. The drums were sound checking right next to Wu set, which was a little odd. But other than that, I didn't see too much of any problems with extraneous sound.
Here's a little sample from DJ Tebow. He rocked the Silent Disco at Camp Bisco this past weekend. You can check out DJ Tebow's artist page as well as his new project, Autobody, with Felix Moreno of Future Rock at theunce.com. Let's get back to the music. Obviously, the focal point of Camp Bisco is the biscuits themselves. Mm-hmm. How many sets did they play throughout the festival, first of all?
Due to weather issues on Saturday, which I think was probably felt throughout almost the entire country that day, they had to combine two of their sets for Saturday in just one long set. So officially, they only played five sets, but they played a length of about six.
Now, tell me about their actual performance. Do you think they stepped it up because this is Camp Bisco, this is their festival? Or did it seem like they were playing a regular Disco Biscuits show?
Well, I mean, I think that it would be impossible for the Disco Biscuits to not feel the need to step it up. Like I said, I think that there's a lot of inspiration coming from all the other acts. And obviously somebody like Mark Brownstein, you know, who's, you know, obviously been very, very outwardly spoken and vocal about, you know, the whole festival, was really excited about a lot of the acts. So I think that they felt the need to step it up. As far as their performances individually, I could kick myself for not, being able to make it there on Thursday, because that set list was easily one of my favorite set lists I've ever seen by the Disco Biscuits. But as far as for the shows that I saw, I feel like Friday, they started off a little slow with Mark Dusseldorf. The jam out of it was a little bit, it was a little noodly, didn't really seem to go anywhere. But once they dropped in the Spaga, the next song, that was really when the set picked up steam. And, that set finished out. The second set that night was absolutely incredible. And then Saturdays, you could really see that, you know, this wasn't business as usual. They were, obviously the Biscuits, they kill it, you know, when they play it generally, but, you know, I didn't really hear any flubs. I didn't hear, you know, any troubles, you know, with jamming other than, you know, the little bit of brief, you know, problem I heard with Morph. It was impressive to watch a band in their craft and really playing, you know, possibly at the height of, maybe not the height of their career, but the height of this new, as they call it, Biscuits 2.0 with Alan.
Any MVP picks from you?
As far as the Biscuits, I mean, I think that, you know, there's a lot of stuff to talk about with the Disco Biscuits from that set. As far as the sets go, you know, Friday, the second set was incredible. They opened with 7-Eleven, and then, you know, went into an inverted Little Betty Boop into Tricycle. But when they went into Orc theme, the jam was a very, very long, incredibly patient, trancy jam, you know, that eventually dropped into a new song they played called Bombs, and then finally segued into Sweating Bullets, which they don't play very often, and even Naiva, which is one of the more current songs, was really impressive. And that was another example of what Mark Brownstein has been putting on. A lot of the sets they played were fan-voted set lists, where that he let people post their sort of fantasy set list on his Facebook wall, and then he sort of went through and then picked which ones he wanted to play. So it was obvious that they were really giving the fans what they wanted. As far as Saturdays go, the very first set that they played Saturday, it was just a day set, was, I think, it was the MVP of their performances, if not of Can Disco. They finished the dyslexic completion of On Time, and then into a C to B, which John Gutwillig, or Barber as he's known, was just absolutely in control, and it was just a gorgeous, gorgeous little suite they played, and I was just incredibly impressed. And then set two, they really stepped it up because they knew they had to sort of recover from the rain sort of postponing or almost canceling Can Disco.
Okay. Now, they released a new album earlier in the year. Did any of those cuts make it into the set list?
I was actually sort of expecting to see a lot more songs from Planet Anthem. However, the only song that they played, and I mean, granted, they played it twice, but it was, you know, obviously in different sections. They played On Time, which is, in my opinion, the best cut off that album. But other than that, there weren't any other appearances from Planet Anthem, which may lead me to wonder if that was a bit from the fans wanting some more classic songs. They did, however, play a couple new songs, or newer songs that weren't on the album, one of which was Naiva, which is a more current song written by Brownstein earlier this year. And then they opened set two with Portal to an Empty Head, which is a really, really strong song. And they actually played that with an extra guitar player. It was Chris Machete from the band Rack. But aside from that, it was a lot of old, older sort of classic songs. They played Mr. Don and Pat and Dex, which they never or very rarely play. So I was kind of interested by that.
You've been to Can Disco before. How would you rate this lineup? How would you rate the Biscuits' performance?
It's a great festival. It's an excellent, you know, they do a great job running it. Everything about it, the setup of it, you know, the lineup, obviously, you know, with bands like LCD Sound System, Thievery Corporation, Ween, and then, you know, some really important DJs like Rusko. It's a great festival, and it's a festival that it's tailored to, I think, to electronic music fans, you know, and at the same time, it's still very much a, you know, part of that jam community. The Biscuits, you know, playing was incredibly impressive, you know, and there's been, you know, there's always discussion, you know, be it on message boards or just hallways of concert halls, I guess, that sometimes the Biscuits can be hit or miss, but they really stepped up their game. I would consider all these performances to be, you know, between an A or a B, nothing lower than that. They really brought it. It's a terrific, terrific festival. It was great. A+, I guess, I would give it.
If you're not a Biscuits fan and you just dig the electronic music, is it worth going?
I would say so. I mean, I've actually spoken with people who are, you know, into DJs and not so much into jam bands. And the Disco Biscuits, to their credit, do a pretty good job of appealing to both hardcore electronic fans and to jam band fans. I mean, you know, there are some, you know, issue with sort of longer stretched out segments maybe that people aren't, you know, about. But I mean, the thing is, with the amount of acts, with the kinds of acts they have, it really appeals to that electronic scene. You know, if you are a fan of DJs, you're going to have a good time because there's plenty of music to go around. And at the same time, if you've never heard the Disco Biscuits, even, and you are an electronic music fan, you might find yourself as a convert. It's a fickle festival. It's interesting. You know, it sort of caters to both crowds. And, you know, when you see bands like, you know, sort of more indie favorites like LCD Sound System or Thievery or, you know, Ween, you sort of wonder just, you know, how big is this festival going to eventually get? Is it going to push its way towards Lollapalooza to where it's just this really broad thing, or is it going to stay really centered? But, you know, the Biscuits did a great job of picking artists. The management did a great job of figuring out who fans on both sides of the fence would really want to hear.
Perfect. Natty Morrison from theunts.com, thank you so much for being on the Unts podcast.
No problem. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's Unts podcast. Thanks goes to Chad David Shearer with Camp Bisco, George McCabe, and of course my guest Natty Morrison. You can read his complete reviews of Camp Bisco right now at theunts.com. Coming up in the next few weeks here on the Unts podcast, we're going to feature Fort Knox 5 out of D.C., Virtual Boy, Thievery Corporation, and some festivals taking place at the tail end of the summer. You don't want to miss it, so go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, write us a review, and tell us what you think of the show. I'd like to encourage all our listeners to visit theunts.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the show, or you'd like to be a guest on the program, contact me at anand@theunce.com. That's A-N-A-N-D @theunce.com. Catch you next week.